listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
All right, we go through the whole Monterey race weekend recap, some funny stories, and some good sights and sounds from the track as well.
Ooh, and some good food.
It's good food and an epic spin out. Man, that was a big spin out. I must have covered 300 feet in that spin out.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That was a full football field.
It's dramatic.
Yep. Always embarrassed, never scared. That's the name of my next book. And so we'll get into all that. First, Continental OE Technology Series. You can find weird things in your cars. I found a little dirt in my car after the spin out. A little bit of gravel.
What?
Yeah. You also find Continental belts. Bet you didn't know they're OE on millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, BMW, VW, and GM vehicles. Continental is launching the aftermarket multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series, fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function for 98% of vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. Continental OE technology series multi-V belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. And you get the full story. Now, some of you may not aficionados of multi-V belts, but we're going to get
These are the serpentine belts on every single car now.
OETechnologyseries.com is where you go, and you can get the multi-V story. OETechnologyseries.com. Yeah, get it on. Get to get on it. Get it on. And welcome to CarCast, man. Carl, that's good. That's Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea over there.
Hello.
Man. Just Matt. Matt the Moderator, man. Back from...
from Monterey.
Monterey. Car week. Big week.
A couple days of detoxing.
Lots of stuff going on over there. Lots of excitement. First off, Max Pata, I'm wondering if this... Information is discernible or gleamable or something, but it was blazing hot at the track on Wednesday when we pulled in, and we pulled in at 4:35 in the afternoon, and it was scorching hot.
Yeah. Sean was already texting. He's like, I don't know what's going on, but it's ridiculous.
It was also ridiculously hot on Thursday, the following day. Now, you go, well, what's the rub? Well, the rub is you do want to know temperature at the track for various reasons.
Yeah.
I had sat at my house and I said, you know what? It's always the same weather at the track and at Monterey. Every year it's the same, but I'm going to check. And I did the like Monterey 10-day forecast, and this was 4 or 5 days before we left.
Mm-hmm.
And it just said 68, 68, 68, 68, like all day long. It's like 58 at night, 68, you know. And I was like, okay. And then I stopped and I thought, you know what? Tell you what, Monterey is not the track. It's
right.
Not Laguna Seca. Laguna Seca is up in the hills. It's a lot of asphalt and it's hotter. It's always hotter. It's, you know, 10% hotter. And I thought, I'm not going to just do the 68 in Monterey. I'm going to do Laguna Seca. And I typed in like Laguna Seca. It's like WeatherTech Laguna Seca, 10-day forecast. So I was like, okay, they have their own forecast. 68, 68, 68, 68.
68.
We pulled in. It was 101.
Yeah.
I mean, it was oppressively hot. Now you go like, well, so what's the big whoop? Charles got me a cool shirt and a cool bucket and a cool everything to ride around in that car, but I checked the temp and it was 60s. So I was like, I don't want to deal with wiring this thing up and have one more thing for Sean to try to figure out.
Right. And if it's not going to get used, it's just
not going to get used.
You're
like,
just throwing a wrench in his hole.
I'll use it next time we go to Fontana on Father's Day. I'll use it. So I was like, it was insanely hot. And then I became obsessed. Like, what's up with the 10-day forecast? And not only the 10-day forecast, the day before we left, I plugged it in. So then I was like, wait a minute. So I told Matt, track tomorrow, Thursday. What's it Thursday at the track? They must have changed it. It's scorched. It's blazing. Anyone you spoke to there, including Bruce Canepa, who's been there every year for 30 years, went, Wednesday was the hottest day it's ever been at this track.
Yeah.
Ever in any month. And so I was like, okay, what's it going to be tomorrow? It's like 68.
68.
And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. It can't be. It cannot cool down 40 degrees. If it is, no, 68. And I'm like, no, it's not 68 at Pebble Beach. At the track, 68.
68.
Went in on Thursday. It had dropped down to 97.
Right.
What the fuck? What's going on? Why don't we have? And then I kept obsessing. Like, hit it again. Check the car temp. Check the. Oh, it's 86.
How could it be wrong? We're standing at the track checking the temperature, and it says it's 68, and we know it's 91 outside.
We're pulling on up the hill. We're going down into the parking lot at 9:15 in the morning on Thursday. It says 86 degrees on the car thermostat.
Yeah.
Why does the 10-day forecast still say 68?
I don't know why we don't have the technology to
make
this happen.
It's a racetrack. Yeah. Don't you have scramp and all this stuff with the,
Doesn't the racetrack should have their own, like, temperature and track temp, like the surf report, right? Like, they should have it, like, on their website, the WeatherTech website. By the way, weather is in the name of the track.
It's a good point. And look, guys, for tuning purposes, for tire purposes, for things like that, want to know, cool suit, cool shirt. They want to know what the temp is when they're coming out from Oregon for four days.
It would help.
It would help.
Yeah, it would help. We went to the Shelby screening event, and Allie, who works with us in films, she walked up and said, because her parents have a house there, she's like, what's going on? It's the hottest day ever in Monterey.
Yes.
And I was like, it's funny you said that because Adam might have mentioned that as well.
Speaking of a Shelby Doc, which made me laugh, I was standing with Mike August. We were like standing looking at the bleachers, looking at the cars coming around the Trans Am race. And he went, he was talking about Fox and Fox being bought by Disney or Disney buying Fox or whatever. Fox, Disney, Fox, whatever. And he's like, all the Fox movies have lost money, blah, blah, blah. Ford v. Ferrari's a Fox movie. We'll see how, whatever. And then he said, you know, they did a screening here at Monterey. They're doing a screening at SEMA. And I said, they did a screening of Ford v. Ferrari at Monterey.
Yeah, I didn't see
and, that. And I said, who told you that? He said, Matt DeAndrea.
I said,
wait a minute. I've been with Matt DeAndrea for the last 29 hours nonstop, like everywhere we go. I was sitting in a car for 5 hours. He didn't bring it up to me.
No, I would have had tickets.
No, he told me Ford v. Ferrari. I said, we did a Shelby screening, and he goes, oh, you guys did a Shelby screening? And I said, yeah, we did a Shelby screening. And he's like, oh, okay. I didn't know about that, but I did know about the Ford v. Ferrari screening. And I said, Mike, I believe, once again, I believe you're wrong on this. I've been Matt said we're doing a Shelby screening, and in your mind, something went that way. But we're not doing a – there's no Ford v. Ferrari screening because, A, Matt would have said something to me 30 times. It would have been on our calendar, like, hey, we want to go check out the screening.
Yeah, do you want to see it? They're screening it. Let's go.
Right.
Let's get the advanced preview.
That's what he told me. I was like, no, he did not tell you that.
He did not.
Did not tell you that.
As someone pretty close to this, I feel like I'm sure I did not tell him that.
So we went there. The car was there. The car
was there probably at noon. Because Sean likes to get up in the middle of the night and drive.
He left at like 4 in the morning. It was so crazy, novelty, hot. Sean hates the heat, and obviously on the asphalt and everything with under the car and everything like that. We started the car before we left.
Yeah.
We warmed it up a little back in L.A. That is the last time the car started under its own power. There was no starter issues. There's no clink, clink, clink. There's no sound. There was no anything. There's no grinding. There's no anything. We just turn the key, car start. Turn the key, car start. Last 3 years, turn the key, Car starts.
Yeah, no problem. Load it in the trailer.
Load it. Turn the key. Car starts. Good. Shut it down. Load it in the trailer. Unload it at on Wednesday. Show up Thursday morning to do practice. No starter.
Doesn't work.
For the entire weekend. The entire weekend, no way to start the car. That, I mean, what a way to fucking start the weekend. Like you understand, the car started 271 times.
Yeah.
But it was the 272nd time, which is when we're at the track on Thursday morning, and it stopped.
Clearly, we got hit by an EMP.
That's
and
right.
We fucked up our solenoid.
Like War of the Worlds with Cruise.
Yeah, Cruise could have fixed
putting
it.
Putting that 302 in that 66 Rent-A-Racer. So anyway, we're like, oh, the starter's not going to work for the entire weekend?
Yeah.
And then Sean started to like check everything and pull the starter Thursday morning run group, 10:45. And I said, it was like, I don't know, 9:45. And he's like taking the starter out. And I was like, hey, man, if we can't get that starter fixed, we got to bump start this car.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're being casual about it, but I bump started 1,000 dots in pickup trucks. I've never bump started a 9:35. Like, first gear in that car is good for 80 miles an hour.
Right.
So
yeah,
I don't know if we can just push it at 7 miles, 4 miles an hour and get that thing bump start. I don't know if it's going to start. So we're getting down to like, you know, it's time to get in the car and the car's all jacked up and everything. And I say to Sean, what are we doing? Because it's time to go. And he's like, I got to test this starter. And I like Sean, but a little more clock observation would have been good. I said, Sean, we're not testing the starter. We're putting the starter back in the car. We're bumping the car and we're going out. So that's all we got right now.
Right.
And so he then, he was caught off guard a little bit and then he was in a crazy hurry just to get the starter back in the car.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah.
And we got it all back in the car just to be in the car, not to use it. And then we went and bumped the car.
Right. And it bumped easily, which was good. The part I didn't fully understand was I get maybe dirt or whatever is an issue, but this was just one session. Why did we have to put the starter back in the car to get it out to that race? Why couldn't he just take it out, leave it out for a minute, go do your practice session, test the starter for the rest of the day, and then make a decision? Why did it have to go back in the car? So other than a hole left there.
I don't.
Maybe we could have taped off that hole for debris.
I agree with you. At the time, Sean kind of just posed it like, I got to get the starter in the car before we go out there.
Yeah.
So I went right to hurry up and put the starter in the car. If you can do it fast, let's do it. And he said, I can do it in 5 minutes. I was like, well, go ahead and do it. So,
and he did. I was just a little, I didn't know if there was a follow-up conversation. I didn't want to like cause stress to the situation.
You're right. We could have taken, we'd have to take some carb cleaner and, you know, spray it on. And then we'd have to take a piece of foil tape or two pieces of foil tape and whatever. But he'd probably said, and wasn't he thinking getting up in there?
Yeah.
What if you got off the track? Got some gravel in there, you know, whatever.
Right. I mean, a makeshift piece of cardboard and some gaffer's tape probably would have solved the issue.
Sean would say, by the time you do that, I can bolt this thing back in. It's two bolts.
Yes. But then it wouldn't be laying on a bench outside the car for the rest of the day, able to be tested, is what his goal was.
I agree. I also don't know why we didn't just pull it back off and test it, or maybe we did.
Well, I think at that point we were like, it's not working. We're not going to get a starter. So why don't we just, we know it bumps easily. Let's just bump it for the rest of the weekend.
So we just bumped it for the rest of
which
the weekend.
Which was fine. And
it was fine. It was a little pain in the ass about when to warm it up and then shutting it down on the grid.
And it kind of screwed up our cameras, some of the cameras, the new V-Box system, because the V-Box system was tied into the power and you got to turn the car on and fire it up. And then it got a tack lead and the tack lead, which was analog, tells the system to go.
Right.
And you got to, you know, so if we push you onto the track to bump start the car. Nobody's running after you, hitting the start button on the camera. So there was a little bit of rewiring with that as well. So
it, yeah.
Yeah. I apparently we got it. You know, we got it figured out. So
I went out Thursday morning. The car ran pretty good.
I was just saying you could have saved 8 pounds.
The
left that starter on the table.
The engine is starting to get a little tired. Some of the IMSA guys came by and said, officials said it's kind of smoking out of the back. And Sean kind of said, oh, maybe there's an oil line that's leaking or something. But Sean checked it and he just said it's just basically coming from the head gasket.
That's it. Like, it's yeah, it's that or a ring or something. It's a little... It's
tired.
Yeah,
the car works. It pulls okay. It's probably down on.
Well, we know it's down a little bit on horsepower because I mean, we dynoed it and we got some pretty good numbers out. We didn't get Bruce Canepa numbers out of it, but we got, I don't know, period correct numbers. I think we were basically told.
Yeah, maybe a little light on that, but I think we can agree it's probably time for a freshening up of the engine. Car worked fine. Had some issues with the tachometer because of the V-Box, which was hooked up to the tachometer, but then
it was giving me weird readings and was cutting out. But luckily, the weird readings were only in the high RPMs. Use it the least?
I went out and just kind of went around the track and got the car up to temp and just kind of, on Thursday morning, just kind of went around the track. And I had 50 cars in a race, and I qualified 25th or something.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle. And then we went out again on Friday morning and probably picked up a little bit of a pace and got the car up to, well, let's see, up to 14th or 15th, I think.
Well, Friday when we pulled the sheet, it was 25th, and then Saturday morning at the first race, so you qualified up to 15th. So Saturday morning you started in that 15th spot.
Right.
And 14th? 15th.
Somewhere in there. I can't remember 14th or 15th. Anyway, I'm sorry. I think we screwed this up. I went from 25 to 24th place. Then I went from 24th place to 14th or 15th place. And then so on Saturday, for the Saturday morning race, which is a race, they just have two races.
There's two races. And all the practice sessions are qualifying sessions.
Yeah. And I got hollered at a little bit by the IMSA guys for missing the checkered flag in the practice session, which is up on turn 7, which is I'm always looking for the checkered flag start finish. The rules are, I don't believe we went over this too clearly in the driver's meeting, but the rules are when there's a pace car on the track, the only place you're going to see a checkered flag is start finish.
Okay.
When you're doing a warm-up session or qualifying practice or something, but no pace car, just get out there and start getting into it.
Yeah.
You will see, it's a newer thing. You'll see a checkered flag on turn 7 so that you can pull in without going around again.
Right. So they're saying race is over. You don't have to cross the finish line. You want to come in as quickly as you can. Because they want to get the next group out.
Didn't see the checkered flag on turn 7 because I wasn't really looking for a checkered flag on turn 7. I went around and saw the checkered flag start finish, which I thought,
So you had to go around again basically to
you
to
add about
in.
Three quarters of a lap on your whatever.
And ooh, you got a parade lap in there.
Yeah, I know.
Corolla's taking a solo lap in the race.
So I was told about that. I was told about smoking. We'll tell you about, I'll show you a lap from the morning session lap. I just said take lap 8 and lap 9, and I just sort of remember the end of the session coming up on some cars and having it be good speeds. First, I'll tell you about Castrol Edge Stronger. Under pressure, engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Keep the metal from rubbing and robbing each other, everybody. Three times,
fool.
Stronger than leading full synthetic. Against viscosity breakdown, Edge It's formulated in ways to exceed the toughest industry standards. It is Castrol Edge, everybody. Yeah. We'll let you hear the sights and the sounds, or at least hear the sounds.
So we're going to post these up on YouTube and carcastshow.com.
Mm-hmm. We'll probably edit them up and clean them up a little and blah, blah, blah.
Probably.
Oh, I met Brad Frizzell, who's the guy who won the championship in the car that I'm, the Z car that I'm coming up.
The orange one.
Yeah, I think it was called, it was called, I'll think of the name of it. You can go ahead and run it, Max Pata. Transcendental Racing. They put a concrete runoff strip around the first turn and the second. And also my pedal was going too deep to do the heel toe again. Yeah. We had some brake fade and some braking related issues.
So this is the in-car camera we're looking at over the shoulder, out the front window. You can see really what's going on.
They put some cement runoff outside of turn six, the uphill. I should get my turns figured out. The turn six where you go down and dip down, you can see it. Some of the times I was using a lot of it, sometimes I wasn't. But they've added some cement where guys would hang tires all the time right here, go in apex, go wide there, onto the green, past the runoff.
Yeah, I see it.
They added it on there, which is interesting concept, or I don't know if it's a concept, but guys would hang tires there all the time and just shoot gravel onto the track. So the car's running pretty good at this point. I'm running pretty consistent lap times, and we're starting to get a little comfort level. Later on, I had a horrific spin. I think it was driver error, but someone told me that F1 cars dropped a little oil down there as well. At the end of the straight, probably going about 130, 132, something like that, but the brakes are kind of fading and going deep, so you have to really... It's a little nerve-wracking because you want that brake pedal at the end of that long... straightaway.
Sean bled the brakes again at the track. It just wasn't really solving the problem, so it's got to be looked at.
Yeah, and I was starting at some point to slide the car around a little bit, and I was starting to get comfortable sliding around a little bit. Some would say too comfortable, perhaps, and that's where the big slide out occurred. But again, going up the hill and coming around to the turn where they added some runoff. Right there.
Oh, yeah, I see.
See, on the other side of the striped line.
Yeah, when you guys watch the video, you'll see, it looks like a blue or a greenish teal kind of cement off to the side.
The car in front of me did not have their brake lights working, which always kind of, I don't like it. I like to see where they're braking as they're going into turns and things like that. I don't know what the rule is. The rule is probably... You're supposed to have them. I don't know if they fail or they shut them off or like what they do. I was getting into first gear at the end of the Andretti, whatever. Not the Andretti, but the end of the straightaway or beginning of the straightaway. We're pulling up on our friend.
Yeah, it's looking good. Looking like a fast lap. It's looking good. So in your race, we'll talk a little bit about the spin out, and we probably got some footage of that we'll post at some point. But I think it was turn three. You came out of turn three, and I saw a couple guys spin throughout the weekend. I saw one of those Greenwood Corvettes spin out there as well. The session right before you in the Saturday afternoon race, basically the last of the races for everybody. They had the vintage F1 group out there, and those guys were running hard. And from the very first lap, one of the lead cars was blowing a lot of smoke. Mm-hmm. And he ended up doing like, I don't know, two laps or something before the pace car came out. And they determined it was an oil leak, and it was pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed to stop that group, but because it was the end of the day, didn't want to ruin it for everybody. So they postponed everything about 20 minutes. They had to clean mm-hmm. up the track. They had to get that guy off the track. Then they let those cars go out again. And the weird part was, I don't know if they just tightened an oil line and he went out again, because when they restarted the race, it looked like somebody was blowing smoke again,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting. So there could have been a little bit more oil on it. And I was sitting in the suite where that turn three is, and that's where you came around. And by the time you were out of my view, because we're tucked right into the number three corner there, that's when you got a little left, little right, and did that really awesome like 100-mile-an-hour drift, just sliding and sliding. And,
yeah,
it was kind of epic, but you know, I didn't hit anything. It was fine. It was just, you know, but also, you know, I'm sure you're going through your head at some point going, don't hit anything, don't hit anything, but also don't stall the car because we don't have a starter.
Yeah, the car wouldn't restart.
You wouldn't be able to start it again, and. You know, a lot of these guys, you get out into the dirt, they wait a minute, let the track clear, fire it up, and get back out and pull it in or do another lap or whatever they got to do. But if your engine was out, you're out.
Yeah, I'd have to be towed in, and they'd have to bring the tow vehicle out. And
which is far more embarrassing.
It's far more embarrassing, and they'd have to flag the race. I was able to keep my car running because I knew I couldn't restart my car. When I was watching game film of it, I was trying to catch up, and I was sort of reeling in this guy in this RSR who I've seen there many times before, and he was actually the same guy I think I was trying to reel in when that 914 came all the way down the track and sort of cut me off.
Yeah.
And by the way, when you see that I spun out or went to the dirt, famously my Z car, that corner, that line, everyone just runs through the middle of that corner and then goes down. That guy went way out.
Yeah.
Thus going like, okay, here
almost
I come.
Almost like he was saying pass.
And then he just came
slow.
Way down. Yeah. into the, like, you don't do that turn like you do normal turns where you go out and then you come all the way in. You run through the middle of it and then you kind of apex it. But anyway, I was trying to catch up with this guy. Now, what was happening is it was the last race of the day. We're about six laps in. I was getting comfortable kind of sliding the car around a little, like having it slide out mm-hmm. around the corner a little and gather it back up again. I'd done that on a few turns where the end kind of came out and I got on it. And if you see guys drive these 935s, they're just sawing away at the wheel. The end's sliding all over the place. They're just sawing away. So the question is once you go through the corner, once you try to apex a corner, how soon before you get back on the boost? And the sooner you get back on the boost, the better for speed. So what I did as I was looking at the film, the driver's error part is instead of tracking it all the way out after, you know, try to hit the apex and then track all the way out. Instead of tracking all the way out, I went, well, I'm comfortable sliding this car around a little. I'm going to get back into it and cut it a little bit short and try to get down the track sooner.
Okay.
Versus tracking all the way out. I was like, I'll just pull it a little harder to the right. The end will come around a little and I'll just track it. I'll start going straight down. And the car started sliding a little bit and I was like, I'm not getting off. I didn't get off it. I was like, I'll just stay into it and I'll just drift it a little and then I'll just smooth it out.
Yeah.
But it then, of course, it just snapped the other direction. I didn't brake. I didn't do anything. I stayed on it and just sort of like, oh, I'm going to just kind of drift it out a little bit and then just popped.
Yeah.
The other direction. So there was no
just a little less, a little light on throttle input, and he starts shifting weight around on that car, And even just a little off the gas can put a little nosedive, and that was probably just enough to
We can watch it. We can listen. We can listen to it too. You can hear that I don't really get off the throttle when the rear end starts going around. I don't think we're going into turn three.
Yeah, so in the game film here, as your steering wheel starts to go left or right, I didn't hear for those second and a half, I didn't hear any change in the engine RPM.
No, I tried to stay. I thought as it started to drift, I was like, don't punch at the brakes, don't back off the throttle, just stay on it, kind of drift through it. We can kind of watch it. Watch it again. Right. So I thought I could just kind of drift through it by staying on the throttle. Evidently,
it's very fast and furious.
Didn't work.
Very fast and furious.
Patrick Long said, "Don't let go of that steering wheel." But once I was going backwards, the wheel was just whipping all directions, and I was just like, just let it straighten out.
I thought
I could save it. I thought I could save it on the track. I thought I could whip it around again.
Oh, you wanted to do like a
whip
like
around.
A spin and keep going.
My first plan was
Larry
to save.
Dixon did it in a Top Fuel car once.
Wow.
He spun a Top Fuel car and kept going.
My first plan was I'm going to save this drift. My second plan is I'm going to do a 360 and keep going.
Yeah.
My third
was. That would have been awesome. That would have been badass.
My third was don't stall the motor.
Yeah. All right. Well, it looks like we're going to need some tires.
Flat spot.
Well, let's talk about brakes because your brakes weren't doing so good. You need to talk to these guys over at Brembo.
No kidding.
Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. Brembo, the world leader in braking systems, has now made replacing brake pads on your everyday vehicle even easier. For domestic, Asian, and European models, from subcompact cars to full-size pickups like my Lightning. BremboStoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE-equivalent replacement brake components. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, go to BremboStoreUSA.com now to get the brakes, which have been the choice of champions for over 50 years. Your car doesn't need to be equipped with Brembo. These guys have replacement rotors and pads for just about everything out there. And for a limited time now, you can use our code CARCAST10 to get 10% off your first purchase and help achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. So go to BremboStoreUSA.com. Use code CARCAST10.
Yeah, all in all, it was a good It was a good weekend, and I got in basically 40 laps out of 44, or 38 out of 44, or something like that. You end up doing about 11 laps.
You were in all the sessions, and it worked out great, and the car looked good, and it was running good. And you're right, if you get a little sideways, you want to do it at the end of the whole weekend.
The whole weekend.
You know, you have fun at the track, and you say hi to everybody, and people are coming by. And
we had a good time. We had Dan Wood, who's a chef, who just came by and took care of us and cooked out for us.
Oh, my gosh. He was at the house Friday. We plowed through $1,000 worth of caviar for some reason.
I mean, one tin worth of caviar, but and, it was unbelievable.
And then we just snatched up, Sean and Jose just snatched the barbecue from the Airbnb Saturday morning, brought it to the track, and
literally
showed
the barbecue, not the barbecue food.
No, they brought the whole barbecue, brought it to the track in the back of the truck. Dan showed up and fired up the grill, popped up some tables. Everybody was coming by.
Yeah, best tacos ever. Yeah, unbelievable stuff. I'll tell you part of the beauty of
We're looking at meat pictures.
Part of the beauty of what, by the way, man, that tomahawk bone, man.
Oh, man.
I got up Sunday morning. Saturday morning? No, I got up Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
I put that shit in the microwave. It wouldn't even fit in the microwave. It was so big. Look at the tomahawk bone. I just got that thing heated up. It wouldn't go on the go-round part. It just wedged in there. I just heat up, and I just held it like a caveman and just bit on it. It was awesome.
Oh, man. He had 120 dry-aged. He had day dry-aged. He had 21 day. He had the pork.
It was all so good. But let me tell you that, like, the real key to being a guy like Dan and being a chef and being even a caretaker. It's this guy, people like cooking for people, like taking care of people. Mm-hmm. They're good guys. Like, Jimmy's that way. When you go in and you go, I'm going to have caviar for you guys at the house. And I go, I'm from North Hollywood. I don't really go for that stuff. Like, I like a nice fish and chips or hot dog on a stick or something, you know. A caviar guy.
Yeah, you're a baller.
Next thing you know, I ate like 28 chips with caviar on them because we put the creme fraiche. And there's a difference between the $1,000 caviar and the $80 caviar.
Yeah,
not weird and salty. And I got to tell you, he just got a, I would call a high quality sort of not organic, but like a chip, not, you know, not a Pringles chip, but high end. Like, if you went to a nice store and bought a bag of nice chips with sea salt or whatever, you got a good chip, put a little creme fraiche on there, put a little caviar on top of that, and then a little scallion or something on top of that.
Just take the little roasted potato and smush it.
Yeah.
And put the little caviar on top.
Oh, I got into that, too.
I got into that, too.
We just killed that can of caviar, Max Pata.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. That was so good.
He had to teach us how to eat it.
We went to...
that's how lame we are.
did stand-up with Adam Ray. That was a good night. We went to the Shelby Dock. That was good. We went to the Acura party. I forgot we did the Spike Ferriston thing. Like, at some point, Spike somebody Ferriston. Said to me, like, you're kind of busy, aren't you? I went to the DMV before we went Spike's thing. It was a pretty activity-laden weekend.
Yeah.
But it was good. The guys at the track were good. I want to thank Ardell at WeatherTech for always helping out, and Charles over at Infinity, and the Lincoln Navigator.
Oh, yeah. What a great
Charles and Infinity.
Charles doesn't work at Infinity. Although, who knows?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Charles Infinity. I was trying to think. Are we thinking Charles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he produced the show because I can.
Yeah,
he did the
show.
All right, thanks, Charles. But then.
But mostly Infinity.
He made Chris Morgan his waiter after that.
That's right. Yeah, oh, my God. That was embarrassing. We were all out for drinks. We had a big table. It was all of us. It was Nikki Catt, who's so fantastic. He's such a nice guy. And Chris Morgan. And Chris Morgan's friend, his doctor friend.
Fernando
Fleischman, Dr. Fleischman. And Charles was going to order food and drinks from him. And super embarrassing.
Well, what we talked about on ACS, which was funny, is Charles hadn't met everybody yet, I don't think. Charles sat down at the table. Chris, because he's one of those gracious guys, it was one of those stupid things. You know, I don't get the rules. You know, like the rules in life, like it's like the Portola Pub.
Yeah.
And it's a good, medium, decent-sized pub restaurant.
Yeah.
And then...
At a big weekend.
And you may sit just outside of the big opening. It's not like a door or anything. It's just like a big 10-foot wide opening. And they have tables and chairs outside. So it's like saying, it's like if you opened a Mexican restaurant and you said, oh, you want to sit on the patio? And you went and sat, your group of six or eight went and sat down on the patio and you went, can we order some drinks? Oh, you got to walk it in and do it from the bar.
Yeah.
And
why
you
even
go,
have the
but
seat?
You have a waiter walking around. Yeah, he doesn't go to the patio. Like, the patio is not a door or a separate location. It's just one big opening.
Yeah.
Have the person literally step 2 feet outside of where they're working and then order the table of eight with all the rich white guys here. Order it up.
Right.
Someone's getting a big fat fucking tip. Like, whoever missed out on the Chris Morgan tip missed out big time.
Because
guy tips.
He's the nicest guy ever.
So yeah, if I was a waiter there, that'd be the I would pick up that table in a second.
And you're kind of overselling at patio because this was all indoors.
It's all indoors. It's all on the same roof. It's literally just the chairs and table that is outside.
We're on the other side of a planter.
We're not even outside. We're all under the same roof. This is a planter. We're on the other side
of
it.
There's not even like a door to go through. There's like a step with a planter.
And so we're like, can we sit at this big table? There's like nine of us. They're like, yeah, but you can't. We're not coming out. Like, you have to go to your. And it's like, why have that rule? Why is that a rule? Why is it a rule? Who does it benefit?
I don't know who makes that decision, because the waitress working there must go, okay, but that's $500 worth of drinks. Like, how much am I going to make off that table, and now I can't serve that table? Like,
and it's the one weekend a year where maybe you drop it. And isn't there precedent for other restaurants where they walk to different places and get orders? Like, what is it? Like, it's never been done before. It's literally under the same roof, in the same place. It's just on the other side of the opening. And they're like, yeah, well, if you're going to sit there, you're going to have to take care of your own drinks. So now Chris Morgan has to get up and walk back and forth to the bar five times because there's nine people.
And he's the guy that's like, I got this round, guys. This is on me. I'm going to take care of it. And
so he goes, I ordered one of his martinis and he ordered one of his martinis. How many martinis can you hold walking back to it?
Drink to transport is a martini.
Right. Right. So he's walking back and forth. He's dropping off my martini, his martini, and he's going back. And somewhere in the shuffle when he's dropping stuff off, Charles looks at him and goes, hey, I'd like to order some appetizers.
Chris probably put the order in. I don't know what he did at that point, but or unless the rest of the table lit him up. And it's like, Charles.
No, everyone just watched him.
And then Chris, give it a beat, see what happens.
Chris played along immediately. It was funny. He was explaining the kitchen was closed, and Charles was like, well, can we get some calamari? And he's like, I can check. And he's like, Charles like, I don't know. Charles goes, and Chris like, I can check, see if we can open the kitchen, get some calamari. And Charles like, you know what? Give me a blue moon, and I'm going to go to the counter and get cookies from the counter. And he gets up and he walks over. So we didn't even have a chance to tell him. He just gets up and leaves.
Oh, he got told later in the night when he was sitting there and everyone was.
Well, Adam Ray was sitting right next to him watching the whole thing like with amazement. And Adam's coming at it from a comedic standpoint. So he thinks. So Adam reminded me of something I said that I forgot about. But he turned. When Charles got up and went to the front desk to go get some Toll House cookies, Adam looked at me and he goes, is that a bit? Is he doing a bit? Is he doing a bit? And I said, Charles doesn't do bits. He does its, as in it's happening.
It's happening.
There is no bit. It's all it. And he's like, he doesn't know who that is. He's trying to process it through the filter of a comedian and thinking if this guy's with our crew, he's got to have a sense of humor too.
I'm glad Adam Ray came out to the track ahead of time. He was so great. He was so funny. And that whole dinner, that drinks, it was funny. But he had his moment, too, where it was getting late, and some of the guys were leaving the auctions, and this guy walks by wearing a suit or tux, but just looks sad and head down, and his gray hair just scraggly, looked like Eeyore, just like on a bad day. And Ray's like, look at this guy. He must have just like, you know, lost the best day of his life. And I go, no. That's Rob Meyer. He's the RM in RM Sotheby's. He owns the whole auction. It's all his place. And he was just, I don't know, just a long day.
They had the big Hitler car debacle.
Oh my God. That was crazy. We're going to have to save that one for another day. I think we got some game film on that too.
Yeah, I watched it. It was crazy.
Just the, you know, the short of it is the auctioneer, just his accent was a little off, and he sounded like he kept saying 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, but he was saying 13, 14. He didn't pronunciate teen very well.
Pronounce, yeah. And I'm trying to think, but he did on occasion, like he toggled back and forth. He did like three bad ones and then one correct teen.
And when he corrected himself, he's like, oh, it's 17. And then three beats later, he's back to 70.
Right. And so here's, I don't know if they've sold this car. Now, look, in my world, somebody still wants this car.
Yeah.
And somebody still wants to pay X amount of money for it. That's in my world. in the real world, somebody made a mistake, somebody's going to have to pay, and someone's going to need a little discount.
Right. So, you know, we've watched a million auctions on TV, and a lot of times, sometimes the counter, the numbers up on the screen get a little ahead of themselves, and they're like, we're at 20,500, and they're like, well, we're not there yet. So it mm-hmm. goes back. Mm-hmm. They reverse the number a little bit, but it happens very quickly, and it's a common, you know, thing you see up there. But this guy was saying 13, 14, 16, 17, and the screen was 30 million, 40 million, 60 million. And then when he corrected himself, it had gone several minutes ahead of time. So you got to imagine that during these long minutes that are happening, there's phone bidders going, oh, 30 million, 40 million, I'm out. And they're hanging up the phone. And people are probably leaving the room going, it's too rich for my blood. I'm out.
Did we ever figure out what the reserve was on the car?
We don't know what the reserve was, and it stalled out at the $17 million in no sale. I'm sure there's scrambling going on in the back room.
I have seen an RM auction on TV that was from, I don't know, 2016 or something like that, where the guy brought the one-off Ferrari, like center seat, like pre-Dino, whatever. It's, Luigi, whatever, Jr., first guy to import the stuff out to...
I forgot that dude's name.
Canetti. Luigi Canetti Jr. And Luigi Canetti won Le Mans, I guess, in a Ferrari, and then was the first North American porter of Ferrari and blah, blah, blah. And his son still had this one-off car. And I think it got to like 23 mil. And Luigi Canetti, I just remember like is looking at, he was looking at the host and he's like, tough day at the office.
Like 23 million for the car that was handed down to me.
Right.
I paid $22,500 for.
Right. He looked at Wayne Carini. He's like, oh, boy, this is insulting. But now here's the thing. It's a one-off Ferrari.
Yeah.
We can tell you what Testarossa's cost. We can tell you what GTO's cost. We can tell you what 935's cost, give or take. But one-offs are tough. This is a one-off Porsche, and it's not even a Porsche. It's 9 years before Porsche. So you can say this is a $50 million car, and then someone else can go, not worth anything over 25. Look, and the next guy can go, it's not worth over 20. And who's right? I don't know.
The room wasn't surprised when he was saying 50, 60, 70 million. The room wasn't surprised. Maybe phone bidders were out and they were off the line.
Right.
That's the bad part. But when he goes, oh, it's 17, not 70, boos across the room. Boy, the temperature changed in there quickly.
Can't imagine owning that thing and going from 70 to 17.
Yeah, that's
all
the
right.
bummer part for me.
We'll get into more details next time. First, let me hit Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. Mm-hmm. How about you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance.
Yeah.
Take that extra money. Go hit an auction, man. See if you can get yourself a Porsche. And this is the best to-do you're going to do. Go to geico.com, spend a couple of minutes, and see just how much you could be saving on your auto insurance. So, good time. Lots of activities. Sonny was having a good time. Hey, Max Bad, did you find anything about the temps at the track or the temps on Wednesday or Thursday versus just the 68? And why that, how that works. Like, here's the whole thing. I live in La Cañada. I'll check it. It'll be like, oh, Monday, it's going to be 91. I'll go, okay. And then it'll go, Tuesday, it's going to be 84. And I'll feel it when I walk Phil out. Oh, it's a little cooler tonight. Walking Phil, the dog. This was just 68, 68, 68, except for they were 30 degrees off.
At the time, it was like in real time. We couldn't. Do they not know what a thermometer is?
What could be easier than
hook a thermometer
than
up
doing
to the internet?
The temperature at a track.
I don't know.
Is there an app on your goddamn phone? Like, couldn't we just have somebody who worked there with their fucking phone, like, tell you how hot it is every hour?
There's 100,000 people there. Somebody else must have asked this question, right?
So I'm looking at. So I found a weather thing for Laguna Seca,
And right now, it's all 68, 68, 68.
So they're just locked into 68.
Yeah,
forever.
I can't find the forecast from weeks ago. But
there wasn't any articles like record-breaking heat in Monterey or anything. That would have been on Wednesday, man. I mean, it was hotter than it's ever been there. And then do they have attendance? Do they have anybody?
I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't seen it yet.
And I'm seeing some of the numbers come up. I think Gooding did very well. Gooding alone did something like 73 or 76 million. By the way, a lot of people
were
asking.
What did they do the year before? Do you remember?
I don't know. We got to pull the numbers. But a lot of the guys we were asking about the Niki Lauda car, which is fantastic to see. Niki Lauda.
It was a good-looking car. And I will say this about the Niki Lauda car. Yeah. Pulled $6 million, a little under what they thought. But again, there's no number.
But in the range.
Yeah, in the range. And nobody can tell you with any certitude, like, this is how much an F1 car goes for. They don't have any of that.
I thought it was good money. I don't know if it's all the money, but it's the right money. It's a cool piece.
Whoever sold it did fine. Whoever bought it will do fine as well. That'll be $10 million soon. It looked great in person.
McLaren F1 LM spec. 106 McLarens, I think, made 2 LM specs. And what did it go? 19.8, I think.
19 change. Is that all in?
Yeah, all in.
Leno's happy. Max Pata, we'll follow up on this in subsequent or later shows. You can go to Portland. Check us out at the World of Speed Motorsports Museum.
I think you can bring your car out for that.
Friday, August 30th. Yeah, doing a car show. We'll be there with Mario Andretti. And just go to amcrolla.com for all the live shows and everything you want to do. Yes, Max Pata.
I found in Mercury News, Monterey, nearly a dozen cities in the Bay Area in Monterey County set or tied new daily heat records on Wednesday.
Okay, perhaps you should include that in your forecast when I'm on Tuesday, I'm looking at the temp.
Right.
You're going to set a record for heat, except for you just have 68 across the board.
How about Wednesday night and they're doing the weather report on the news, they don't go, today was off base. We're probably going to see some of this tomorrow.
Jesus.
Meteorologist Ryan Walburn of the National Weather Service is quoted saying, obviously a hot day across the Bay Area.
That's it. All right. Well said, sir.
One they should have anticipated. You can check out Shift and Steer, available on iTunes and Podcast One. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla. For Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.